Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And hello once again, this is Coach Chuck Creasy, and it's another week of American Tennis. Every Wednesday at noon on the UR Tennis Network, you can listen to American Tennis. And we'd like to thank J.P. Weber, who has taken over the UR Tennis Network, and now he's combined it with the We Coach Tennis program on his Yellow Ball Network. So anyhow, folks, it's tennis, and it's 4 years now that we've been doing the American Tennis program, and hats off to Lisa Stone, who is in her fourth year also of Parenting Aces. I think fifth year, maybe. She started her program, I think, in about 2013 there. Also, we thank John Denise for his Florida connection, and you can hear Lisa Stone on show on Tuesdays at noon, and John Denise Thursday at 4. Actually, it's 5:30 Eastern time, folks. 5:30 Eastern time, 4:30 Central time. So this is the American Tennis, and we're every Wednesday at noon. And you can go to my website at chuckcreasy.net and get every program that we have done over the past 4.5 years now. And I'm just glad to be able to talk about tennis. I'm glad to have the program. Hey, folks, I'm glad to be working in tennis and to have a sport of a lifetime. And listen, it's a sport. It is not an after-school activity in its purest form. And we want to talk. I'm going to throw a little bait out there or a few little intros. We want to talk about tennis today as an athletic endeavor, not just an after-school activity, not just something as about forehands and backhands. You know, folks, I've been coaching now tennis for 46 years, but I was in other sports. I was in football as a youngster for 5 years, up until about freshman high school. Then basketball through my freshman year in college, 1 year in college. They had freshman teams back then, so it wasn't any great feat, but I was proud to be on a college team for a while there. Grew up in Indiana basketball. Gosh, I ran high school cross country. We did all the sports. I played, I was crummy in baseball, but I played it too, and we played all the sports. So we were sort of athletes first and tennis players second. And the advantage that I have had has been unbelievable, to look at my tennis players as athletes first and competitors first and then tennis players. And that's what we're going to talk about today. And I will also chum the water there, or put a little bait in by talking that, oh, golly, we're not going to have a U.S. Open champion from America again. Now, this is since 2002, I think Andy Roddick was the last one on the men's side. That's 15 years times four. That's 60 tries, no USA champion. And if you take out Andy Roddick, really it's been, I forget when Agassi won his last one there. And, you know, we had Sampras and Agassi and that group of Courier, and they all came up. You know what was great about Courier, too? That guy was an athlete. He was an athlete. And the other guys were, too. And if you look at Djokovic, and if you look at, you know, Murray and these, and they could be playing a lot of other sports. And I'm not saying that our best tennis players cannot. They are great athletes. But are we stressing the right things in our training? And that's what I wanted to bring on our guest today. And I'm going to get him on the line here. And I believe Terry Derrimer, are you on the line there, Coach?
I am, Chuck. I am, Chuck.
Okay, man, I left a few intros here, but, folks, I got to talk about Terry Derrimer, definitely one of my favorite friend coaches that we've ever had. But there has never been a more competitive atmosphere than when Clemson used to suit it up against West Virginia. You can, you know, there's a thing, Terry, that we say that you can feel the athlete on the other side of the court. You can feel the competitor. Actually, for years, Terry, you'll get a kick out of this.
Right.
But when I'd bring a recruit in, I used to play him in horse and basketball. Okay?
Right.
Now, I guess that's a tryout rule or something that we're breaking. But Terry, I used to want to feel if the guy was a competitor. You know, have you ever done that? I mean, when you play in horse against a competitor, you feel them on the other side of the court, or well, you feel them, don't you? I mean, it's nothing
about it,
but you know that the person's a competitor or not, you know.
For
and
sure. Yeah,
good. Yeah,
if the other guy is gonna compete or actually kind of give up on you, you can feel it, you know it. Yeah,
you really can. Whether it's ping pong. I have a friend here that's a 65-year-old man in town, and the guy has no strokes, no form, but when you play him in ping pong, you have to really get up for it. It's not like you can hack around and stuff, but you can feel a competitor. Terry, you're from Cumberland, Maryland, and I wanted to give people a little bit of background. Very much like myself, you were a multiple-sport athlete, baseball, basketball, football, and then tennis, not until age 26. Your main sport was baseball, Terry. Terry, folks, Terry was drafted by the New York Mets at age 20, right out of 21, right out of college, where at Fairmont State, where he went in West Virginia. And he made it up to double-A ball. You played double-A ball for 5 years, actually, Terry. And you went to then West Virginia, and you got your master's. But you were drafted by the Mets, which, man, that had to have been a pretty daggone exciting thing. And I wanted to say that thank you for help talking to my son a little bit about baseball. You told him, play every position you can. You said, hey, could you just throw that in there, why you don't think you went to the majors? You told me a story about it. You said you couldn't play every position or something. Talk about that real quick, Terry.
Yeah, when I got drafted through high school and college, I played shortstop. And then when I went away to the first minor league team, they moved me to second base. And they sent you to all the draftees go to a week-long camp before they send you out. So I'm still at shortstop, and I go into the manager for my first pro game. He says, you're going to be starting tonight, and you're going to be playing second base. Here I was, starting my first pro game, and hadn't played second base since Little League. And so the kind of the moral of the story is that you never know. You got to be ready to play anything. And if I could have played a little more third base, maybe even a little outfield, I probably could have stuck in the major leagues as a good utility player or maybe not an everyday player. I didn't hit quite well enough, but I was a good fielder. You know, but the more you're able to do, the longer you can stay, you know, in baseball.
Could I tell you one thing about competing against you? You had that baseball mentality. I think you play so many games in baseball. You have your ups, you have your downs. You have the shoulda, coulda, woulda won the game, and then at the last second, a guy gets a hit or doesn't get a hit. The ups and the downs, but you had a way of riding the ups and the downs very well. Most people would have even said you are just an extremely kind person and laid back. However, from every time Clemson played against West Virginia, Terry, it was like I said, suit them up today, boys. This is going to be nasty. And the one time we went to Morgantown there to play you, we were top 10 in the country, and we went in there, and the guys walked into your facility. It wasn't much. I think you had some like a gym,
right?
You know, and I remember the sort of ready-made courts, but you cut us up, and the match was done in about 2 hours like a chainsaw. And then, but the point was, is Terry, you felt you as a competitor. Let me just talk about your tennis. You coached 16 years at
right.
West Virginia. Now, folks, I want to tell you, West Virginia dropped their men's program now. They don't even have a men's program, and it's a tragedy. But in those times in the 80s and in the 90s, West Virginia was probably the most feared competitive team east of the Mississippi. Maybe Clemson was in there, but people knew when they played West Virginia, you had to suit them up. You were the curse of the Ivy League. Now, folks, they weren't an Ivy League team, but they were in that ECAC division with all the Ivy League teams. And here you have the Harvards and the Yales and the Princetons, and these teams would come in, and what the heck? And West Virginia dominated. And, folks, the All-Americans he had, and this I'll just tell one last story, Terry, on you, and then we got to get to the topic
right.
because I know
right.
that you only have a short time today. Folks, so here we are at the NCAA tournament about 1991, 92, 93 in there, and I remember – the number one seed was a kid from a California school. I'm not going to say who, but if this guy was a legal college guy, Terry, I'd like to know it. I know that he was ranked 140 in the world ATP, had been imported. This is what kind of stuff happened all the time, folks, in college tennis. So you'd have these guys that were imported for like one semester. And he came in 140 in the world ATP or something. He was the number one seed. So he has to play Terry Dermus, Henry. I said Henry Mancini. It was not Henry Mancini. It was
Paul.
What was Mancini?
Paul.
Mancini.
Right.
Henry Mancini, folks, is that musician, the orchestra guy back there. But Paul Mancini, Terry. Paul Mancini, the guy's only
right.
5'4" or something like that. And so here comes in this California guy. Actually, he's from Sweden or South Africa, somewhere. And the guy goes into this match, and your guy, you could tell you just by watching the match, about first two games, the other guy said, I got West Virginia today. Four games into it, six games into it, the guy's, man, it's going to be harder than I thought. And the guy,
four and two.
Four and two. Six, four, 6-2. And your guy broke him. The guy wanted no part of Paul Mancini. So, guys, folks, I've said. Go ahead, Terry.
No, I just told Paul. Paul got in that match, and we got ahead. We got a break right away. I said, Paul, just keep grinding to this guy. He's just gonna fold it up, and he doesn't want any part of it. And that's what he did. Yeah, he just did. He didn't want any part of it.
Well, here we go. Now I want to get to the topic. The name of the guest, Terry Durmer, be a competitor and an athlete first, and be a tennis player second. So Terry, here's where we are in tennis. You still with? Okay.
Yeah.
We still haven't had champ. Go ahead, Terry. You with me?
Yeah. Gotcha.
Hello.
No, I just.
Okay.
Yeah,
good.
You still there? Yeah.
I'm here. Yeah, we're good. We're good.
Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to set the table. Look, so many times on our program, we've talked about ability, desire, and opportunity, or nurture, nature, self, the three things that you have to be a champion. And I even tell my team, I tell them, take the legs, beat the head, break their heart, and then their game will fall. In other words, most people go after the strokes. I tell my players, go after the legs first. The first thing
right.
I want them doing is running sprints out on the court and get to their heart by getting to their legs and their head first. And then if you take the legs, beat their head, break their heart, doesn't matter if they have 140-mile-an-hour serve. And the point with mistake we make is we look at this game in terms of strokes. Here's the point I want to make. What they've done now with these abbreviated scoring system, what we're doing now in our training is much about style and a smile. I call it style and a smile. And we've created an after-school activity instead of a real, really, really tough sport. And the proof's in the pudding. Look, we've got – I love this Gerald Donaldson guy we got, Terry. You know, I love the fact Jack Sock made round of 16.
Right.
I love that, you know, he's acting like a tough competitor out there on the court. And I love Francis Tiafoe battling like crazy. Isner, how could you not like Isner? But the point is there's a ceiling that our guys hit. And, you know, we have a Sam Querrey beat Djokovic at Wimbledon. But our guys hit a ceiling. And if they have one tough match, they can't back it up with another and another and another. And it ain't about tennis, Terry. So I wanted to get your thoughts then, okay? I'm going to turn over to you a little bit here and talk about what your philosophy of coaching is and sort of let the listeners know about, you know, what your thoughts about making a champion, whether it's tennis, whether it's baseball, whether it's any of those things. So,
sure.
Anyhow, go ahead.
You know, back when I was coaching in West Virginia, Chuck, you know, recruiting, you know, we came from nowhere and having to make players, you know, so I was looking recruiting wise, I was looking for athletes, you know, that I could make tennis players out of them. Of course, they've been playing junior tennis, but I'm, you know, looking really for guys that maybe play basketball. Basketball was a good transition to tennis, and not so much soccer or baseball was the same season, but it's more of a basketball type player that played basketball as well as tennis. Nowadays, you know all the pros they want the kids not to do any other sports. I think we're missing a boat. You know, when they're playing the other sports, they're learning how to compete. Yeah, and they're, you know, for college tennis, they're learning how to be on a team. My thing with the tennis players, they just become if they don't do anything else, they just become like a ball machine. Yeah, and that's all they can do is hit the ball. But I was looking for athletes. I was looking for kind of big guys. You know, I like the guys that had a good serve. Yeah, good serve and some offense that you could work with, and you could develop the defense. But you know, in the recruiting those guys, we, you know, also those are overachievers. I was looking for overachievers, guys that wanted it. You know, and that's what our team became. They became a team of overachievers that wanted it so bad that they would do anything. And it started with the training. You know, I got a lot from you. I got from a lot from your Clemson teams about, you know, how we had to train. We had to train, you know, harder than anybody else, you know, and we took pride in it. We got back one little story. We got back from the, we got to go to the National Indoors, one year, and the first time we were there at the National Indoors, we got beat first two matches, got home at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I told my assistant coach, said, John, there's one thing we're not in good enough shape with these guys, you know, so, you know, we got off the plane, drove back to Morgantown and ran the stairs in the Coliseum, you know, for a couple hours. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning. Probably can't do that now, but the bottom line is it made us tougher. We had to get tougher, and some, you know, the guys, the kids that play basketball,
Terry, let me jump in there. You sent a message to the team too, of what the bar was, what was acceptable and not. Now, people need to know the NCAA has eliminated our opportunity to basically coach at the most critical and the vulnerable times. In other words, they don't allow us to practice after a match anymore. They don't allow us to practice at strange time. They think on the surface, and then some of you listening out there think, oh, that's cruel to make people run. No, it's not. And let me tell you why. Because players, any competitor secretly hates losing so much that they, if you make them walk around with the loss on their heart for 2 or 3 days, it rots like a rotten apple inside of them. And if you allow, you take over as a coach and say, let's go puke out this loss. We're going to turn bad pain into good pain by training right now. Terry, that's a real important point that we need to make. And that's what you did. So you brought the guys in 2 a.m. after double first. Well, a lot of times people just say, well, why weren't you just happy to be at the championship, the final 16 from West Virginia? Why weren't you just happy? Right. And you said you lost first, and you came home and made the guys train. So go ahead, jump. Right. Sorry for jumping in there, Terry, but I needed to make that point.
Right. Now, that was, and like you say, we did that, and the thing it does, it gives the team and the guys, they get pride in what they're doing. You know, they're accomplishing, you know, even if it's extra running, I mean, they're taking pride in it, after they graduated, and then all the guys come back and say, Coach, you know, thanks, thanks for all you did for us. I mean, it really made us, you know, to be successful in later life. You know,
Question. Have you ever had a player come back and say, Coach, you were too tough on me. I really regret that you were so hard on me.
No, ever. Never. It's always the opposite.
Always.
It's always a thank you. Yeah. Yeah.
Always. Now, you will hear it, though. Coaches, players will come back and say, why didn't you see more in me? Why didn't you try to push more potential out of me? So, you know, people who are not coaches don't understand this, but the hardest teacher, the hardest coach, the hardest parent, the ones that you really remember and really care about.
Right.
Go on, Terry.
Exactly. Yeah, and the other thing about, you know, getting the other sports, you know, just for my, you know, situation with baseball, you know, and they say, well, kids can't pick up tennis, you know, if you're not playing by 12 years old, you're too late, you know, which is, you know, I think is bogus. You know, if the kid wants it bad enough, they'll, you know, later in life is good. But even for me, I mean, I never touched a tennis racket till after baseball, you know, 26 or so. And, but with baseball, it was the same movements, you know, I was an infielder. So you're tracking the ball, you know, and staying low and all those things. And return serve is similar to batting, you know, so all those things relate to tennis, and kids can they can learn tennis later in life and play other sports. With basketball, the movement, the lateral movement, you know, the forward movement, all the movement is similar to tennis, you know. And the thing with basketball, it really makes the kid tougher, you know, really, really tough on the court, you know, because if you experience it in a basketball game, you know, if you're getting knocked around, pushed around in basketball, and you gotta stick your nose in, and that's what tennis players have to do. And a lot of kids don't stick their nose in, you know, they just take their loss and go on home, you know. But I think the bottom line is that I think us as coaches, we have to let the kids play other sports and develop and then transform into tennis, you know.
Well, Coach, you know, yesterday I was talking to the team, you know, and one thing I love being where I am right now is that the guys understand hard work, and everybody thinks they understand hard work, but these guys understand hard work. And one of the things at military schools and you know, I'm at Citadel, but one thing that's fantastic that I love is they understand that there is a rite of passage from one level to the next, and you do not get it without either achievement or through time. And
right.
We're not, as a society, so much into achievement anymore. Or let's say we dumb down achievement, we lower the bar. Can you talk about the harm of giving people things that they haven't worked for in just a little bit? Because I want to go there a little bit. These are ways we're failing, I think, in tennis right now.
Yeah, I think that we're, we're given, tell them they're successful and they're not really successful. And you know, it probably drives you crazy too, but it's, you know, the thing about, you know, giving trophies for, you know, participation trophies. I mean, it's, I think it's you know, taken away from the top players and the accomplishments of you know, other players, but you know, they really, really have to earn it. And that, you know, when, you know, with the team of West Virginia, you know, we were playing against the Harvards and Princetons, you know, we had to prove it. We had to earn it. You know, they wouldn't play us for a long time. They wouldn't play us. You know, they didn't want to risk losing. So finally, we got a chance to play them and end up beating them. But you have to earn everything that you get, and not give it to you. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that was brought up in a meeting I was at last week, they were talking about you know, making kids work so hard and what it does and things and the harm that if they overwork and this overtraining, they have all these guys who are consultants, and they've got, you know, and it gripes me, you know, PhD still stands for piled high and dry, doesn't it? So
right.
But BS right. is, you know, MS right. and then PhD is piled high and dry sometimes, but they get these guys
right.
that they basically have these theories, but they've never understood the value of the competition to getting down and dirty. So here's what I put, that the hard work is the plowing the field, that when the accomplishment finally comes, the kids own it. And the participation
right.
trophies is the greatest harm that we could do, is give people things that they have not worked for, whether it is in a trophy, a grade they haven't worked for. I mean, my golly, you know, with a welfare pro, we could go political on this, but giving people things
right.
that they have not worked for, they do not have pride in them unless they've worked for them. But talk about
right.
being an athlete now. You're an athlete. You get into tennis. This is like a country club sport, and you're a coach at a major university who's very successful in football, basketball, and other sports. So what is talk about your training, like what you would do at practices and those things, Coach. I mean, how did you get everybody to buy in or whatever?
Well, it took a little while. It took about I started in 1979 coaching, and We got in 88, we're in the top 20. But first of all, in 79, I was new to tennis. I was expecting, I was getting a master's. I was going to be a high school teacher and a baseball coach. That's what I was planning on doing. And then, I started playing this game of tennis. At that time, it was in the mid 70s. The tennis boom was going on. Everybody was playing tennis. We had McEnroe and Connors and Lindell and Borg and all those guys. So it was on TV.
By the way, all those guys were tremendous competitors. Every one of those guys you named,
right.
McEnroe, whether or not you liked him, a competitor. Connors, competitor. Borg, these guys were competitors at
right.
the purest level.
Right, right. And what I did, when I got out of baseball, I didn't want to play, the slow pitch, softball. I didn't want to do that after playing a high level baseball. So I started playing tennis. And what I did, Chuck, was I took the pros, and tried to imitate. I tried to imitate their strokes. I started with Stan Smith on the serve. Just try to imitate the serve. There was a guy named Brian Godfrey that had a pretty good volley. I just tried to imitate these guys. I went out on the wall myself and just for hours just hitting on the wall, for recreation. And then just started playing, and I had to teach. I was a graduate assistant. I had to teach tennis to the freshmen. At that time, freshmen had to take phys ed, and it was right out of the book. I liked it, and then I started teaching just in the recreation program there, and then just built on. I got some clients, and then this club in town wanted me to teach some lessons, so I started. And the money was better than being a school teacher, so I ended up teaching tennis for a little bit, and then the current coach of West Virginia was, they were just a regional team. The fellow was like a physics teacher, and he retired. The AD knew me. He said, "You want to take this on?" I took it on, and my first year, I made, I think it was $1,700, for coaching. But the bottom line is, like, in 10 years, we're in the top 20, and I went after the guys. It took a while, but after the guys that really wanted the, like I said before, the overachievers. It was kind of us against them. Type of thing, and these guys really wanted it. They wanted to play on the big stage, and the training, we trained hard, like Clemson. We 6 o'clock workouts, all kind of conditioning workouts, and I would take them down to downtown in Morgantown. There's a steep hill, goes straight up, about a quarter of a mile. Running the hill that's straight up and down, every other day, and all the training that we had to do to really wear, like you said, wear people down. We had to wear them down and outwon it, and the strokes developed, would develop. But the biggest thing is just, like I say, getting a group of guys that wanted it more than the other guy. And nowadays it's kind of hard to find those guys. I don't know if they're out there. They might be out there, but they took pride in beating good teams. We didn't have any indoor facility. We had two court indoor facility. We had to have two practices. One half the group would come, the first half, second half, second group becomes second half, we didn't play on it. We didn't play a whole match until early April. So we're on the road for 3 months, but it really built a bond. It really built a tremendous bond with these guys that took great pride in beating these teams that kind of had more than we did.
It takes
a lot of heart. Talking about heart. The heart is you have to have the heart. The players now, watching these guys, you know, even last night, you know, some guys are just are retiring from matches and you know,
that's unbelievable.
They have the heart, right? But
is that what happened last night with Djokovic? Did the guy quit after?
Yeah, Sarda retired.
What?
Yeah.
Whoa!
He said he
if you retire, no. I'm
he said
sorry.
He had a knee problem.
I'd say measles. You know.
Yeah.
They said you had a stomach problem. You had stomach problem, no
right.
guts. You know,
right.
you got stomach
right.
problem, no guts.
Right.
You know, and,
right.
measles or polio or stomach problem, no guts. You know,
right.
when did this stuff
right.
happen? It started. Look, we grew up. You know, the Labors, the Rosewall, the Australians. I'm only in tennis today because I got to work for the great Harry Hopman, and with him, it was one of the toughest competitive sports in the world. You know, and then it's
right.
I think what happened, Terry, the marketeers, people figured out how to make money out of tennis, and then
right.
the athletes, we turned the athletes into customers, you know,
right.
and into clients. And that's awful, isn't it? And that's why
yeah.
we're not, you know, breeding
well,
excellent. We got a couple callers
yeah,
on the line, Terry.
Yeah. Sure.
Go ahead. Finish your thought there, and then I'll get to a caller or two.
No, I just, you know, back, you know, we had, you know, go back to Sampras or McEnroe and Connors and Borg and all those guys and Sampras and Agassi, that group, Courier, you know, Chang, you know, they all really wanted it. They wanted it more than the other guy. I mean, and I think that's what we're missing. I don't know how bad these guys want it, you know.
Well, you know, one of the things I heard Pat Etcheberry on one time, and he said he used to have control all those guys running, and he used to call Sampras and said, "Hey, I got Jim down here, Courier, running 400s today, but that's okay. You can do them later." He said within 10 minutes, Sampras would be down there wanting to compete,
right.
and then he and Agassi had a thing going. And then we're losing that competitiveness or something. And I think
right.
it's in our coaching, but it might have started with the marketing of our sport. And gosh, we got some good ideas here. I want a couple more ideas,
right.
but I'm going to get one caller on the line here.
Okay.
And I think this is one of your former players, area code 862. It looks like Clay, is that you? Would you like to talk to your coach?
Is that
sure. Hey, Chuck, how you doing?
Good. That's Clay. That's Clay Bibby.
Coach.
Clay, how you doing,
how's
dog?
You, coach? I'm
good.
Doing great.
Good.
Doing great, Coach.
Good. I know
how
Clay's
you,
got
Chuck,
some stories, Chuck.
yeah. I've got some great stories. Chuck, I just want to say what Terry did for the state of West Virginia in tennis was incredible. It created participation on all fronts. It created kids like me who were average high school tennis players, got to go watch the West Virginia Mountaineers compete in the late 80s, inspired me to want to train and work hard and to be a Mountaineer. And I think that's what Terry created. Ever since Terry left West Virginia, I don't think tennis has ever been the same in the state. Junior tennis has taken a big drop. We don't see kids from West Virginia playing on the national level anymore. And I think a lot of that was what Terry brought to West Virginia and his commitment to excellence for the school. And it was a big loss when Terry left and then they dropped the program. So I think that kind of sums it up for me, Coach. And what Terry did for me is inspired me to be in tennis for my whole life. And it's hard to put words on it all.
I got a question for you, Clay. Was
sure.
At this point in your life, is there any way you would ever fault Terry or a great coach for working you too hard or being too mean to you or pushing you too much?
No. Your coach was the greatest role model I ever had. When I was going through it, like I think any player, it's tough to get through it, but I think there's tough moments and you know, make you stronger as a person. You know, I've got a great story. I would call home on this every night, and I would tell my mom, you know, Coach made us run this. He's doing this to me, Mom. I just want to quit. I don't want to do any of this anymore. And my dad would get on the phone, and he would say, Clay, if you quit, don't bother coming home. So, you know, I didn't have a choice. And I think getting through those practices and getting through those tough times, obviously I wasn't a top player for the Mountaineers, but I was down in the low part of the lineup battling away, trying to make the team. And I think it's made me a better person all the way around.
Clay, thanks very much for being on today. And I just cut him off, Terry, because
sure.
I know your time
okay.
is limited. Clay, you can stay on and listen. But is there a better look? Your posterity.
Chuck, let me say about Clay real quick. Yeah, Clay was tremendous player, tremendous kid for West Virginia. And yeah, if you had a whole team of Clay Bibbies. Yeah, it'd be the greatest thing in the world. Yeah, I just I thank Clay for the things that he said, and it was a fun time, and I really enjoyed having Clay. Always enjoyed having Clay on the team.
And he goes on now. His posterity. Here's the best thing: you've got grandchildren in tennis because Clay, he and all the players you coached. Your posterity, regardless of your prosperity, is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Now, all the people that he trains, all the people that your former players train are disciples of the Terry Derrimer School mm-hmm. of Toughness at West Virginia. And here's the thing, in the whole history of West Virginia tennis, I only remember West Virginia tennis for the Terry Derrimer dynasty. And I know Ed Dixon had some good teams afterwards and stuff. He wasn't there quite as long. But the Terry Derrimer dynasty was known for its toughness. And it was so much fun to watch from the outside.
Yeah.
You guys take down all those Ivy League schools. I used to sit and I used to go, oh, my gosh. And when Mancini won at the NCAA tournament, number one seed, I was doing backflips. You know, I mean, you just, we all need things to be inspired for, Terry, and,
right.
and to look. We need things look. What the way Clay talks about you, and the way after all these years your players do this. Why would anybody, please call in and let me know if there is a slick method, a step by step. Here, Terry, they call it. Now, the pathway, we're going to do
right.
the junior development pathway. You've got to do, it's the system. The one problem is they leave out the heart, they leave out the desire, they don't develop the legs, like the legs have to, they don't develop the legs, head, and heart.
Right.
Yeah, which you did. Any last
right.
thoughts? Now, Terry, you've got to go here in a minute, I think. Can you any last thoughts there that you can pass on to people listening?
No, I think that the things we talked about for tennis players, besides having the strokes and having the game, the heart and the determination to stay out there and really out want your opponent, want it more than the other guy, and that can win matches for you if you want it more. And then the other thing is about the kids playing other sports. Still a big believer in you can play another sport other than tennis and still become a great tennis player. And all the sports have different carryovers that can help tennis. And And the thing that the other thing with when you play other sports, if you're on a team or if you play college tennis, you've been on a team before, and you know what it's like to win as a team. You know what it's like to lose as a team, and sometimes just a tennis player doesn't understand that. So, start playing tennis.
Okay,
I started when I was 26, so you can start late.
But Terry, wait a minute. One last thing there. You started when you were 26. Any special things about to do when you start late in tennis?
Well, I think I said you have to put your time in. You start late, you got to catch up. So, yeah, I spent the time hitting on the wall for hours, and trying to learn the strokes, talking. I talked to any good tennis player I could talk to. I just talked to them about tennis, and because you got to catch up. You got to catch up to the years that you might have missed, but you can do it with hard work, learning, and watching. I would watch every match I could watch on TV. Try to learn how these guys are playing. And listening. And being around. Good coaches. That was the other thing. Coaches like yourself. I just want to say one thing, Chuck. That you guys, your Clemson team. You at Clemson. We're the first ranked team to play us. The other teams, it's hard to get on the schedule with these teams. And Chuck was great enough, kind enough to put us on the schedule and play us. It took a while, Chuck. But that means a lot. It meant a lot to our players. It's something that you don't forget. I guess the bottom line is hard work. You really get successful in anything without hard work. Hard work.
And Terry, you're at the Greenbrier in West Virginia right now, right? At the Green, folks,
right.
15 years at the Greenbrier. Take your family over there and see this guy, folks. Take him over and see him. But Terry, thank you very, very much for being on today. We got to go to commercial. And you got enough time to make your appointment there, Coach?
Yeah, I'm good, Chuck. And,
okay.
It was great talking to you. And let's do it again.
Thank you.
Let's do it again.
Folks, we'll be right
Thanks,
back. Right back on American Tennis. Be right back with you.
This is Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at chuckcreasy.net. That's chuckcreasy.net.
This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and see about my camps at chuckcreasy.net. And, folks, there's no shortcuts in tennis. There are no shortcuts in life, and your youngsters will get no shortcuts at my camp. They'll learn about this tough competitive sport, and they will not just have a fluff time at the Total Tennis Training Camps that I have now run for, darn it, 41 years. Thanks for listening to American Tennis, and go to chuckcreasy.net. Folks, if you are not inspired after listening to Coach Derrimer, my golly, get your youngsters to listen to that show. And just folks, about 2 or 3 months ago, I came home from a basketball game. I'd taken my son to a high school basketball game, local one. I hadn't been to a high school game in a while, and I was so disappointed. The lack of defense, the lack of hustle, showboat moves and fancy plays, but I didn't see the toughness that growing up in Indiana playing on high school basketball. By the way, I got to play for the great John McLeod and the great Bill Green and high school in Indiana. And how lucky was I to have such great role models and mentors. And the people I had in elementary school, do you know, I still believe, Ted Fields, I still remember Art Phelan. I still remember Coach Tom Snyder. I still remember Dutch Remke. I still remember Vic Somm. I still remember Mr. Wilder. I still remember, and we remember our coaches. I remember Paul Ditzenberger helping me at the court. I remember these people who inspired me to want to play and do this sport well. And they had a sense of honor for basketball and the baseball and the track and the football and the tennis that I did. So I come home from after this crummy, lackluster hoopla game, and I go, honey, I just want to be inspired. I just want to be inspired. I don't need to be motivated, but I want to be inspired. I want to see things that inspire me. I'm so tired of canned, fake emotion. Canned, fake. This is the pathway. Canned. This is the process. The top-down management. You get so sick of it. It's like after a while, you've been to all the circuses, you got all the T-shirts. You've been to all the ball games, you got all the T-shirts. It's like the adventure becomes such a job, and you go, I just want to be inspired. You know, my wife looks at me, and to anybody listening out there, as a man, and it's not a man-woman thing, but I'm just telling you, as a husband of a fantastic woman, you know, she looks at me in the eyes, and she said, look at me. In the bubble of our home, we will pursue excellence. Do you hear me? And I just almost dropped down and sobbed. I mean, that's all we want is the pursuit of excellence. Where is it at? Everybody's tired of the fluff. We need to be inspired. We need to know why we're doing things. We need a deeper meaning. I heard a long time ago, you know, people will die for a cause. They will not die for money. They will not die for money or fame. You need a cause for a cause. We need a cause. We need a cause in tennis. We need to be inspired by tennis. I'm not inspired when you see these guys drop out. I don't care if he had to play on one daggone leg. That kid French guy, what is his name? Songus? Yeah, I'm calling you out. Play on one leg here at the U.S. Open. Come on, man. You know, really. You know, it is just mind-boggling. And you know what, folks? And this is the truth. I told some trainers and some other people in tennis before, in my 46 years of coaching in tennis, and 40 years that I've been around since I started college athletics, I've only seen one acute tennis injury. All of the injuries are usually chronic. That means something you should have taken care of earlier, something that you didn't deal with, something, yeah, people do get sore shoulders, people do get tired, people do cramp at times. There is loss of conditioning. You take care of all these things before you go to the court. But if once you take the court, we have always told youngsters that I've worked with and college kids I've worked with, fit enough to play, fit enough to stay. Once you're on the court, you do not come off. You do not come off the court. All I want to do is be inspired. I want to see things of courage, bravery. You know, I want to see that player who – you know, I want to see that, what was her name, that gymnast that she played with that broken foot, you know, in the Olympics, and she'd carry or something. I forget. That was inspiring. It was inspiring to me to see in 2004, 2006, the Chinese figure skater, the girl wiped out on the first go-round in the pair skating. She ripped her knee up. Later, she had surgery on her knee. She came back out. It was the Olympics, and she did it again. And how she got through the routine is unbelievable. And that, you know, and she gets a silver medal, and later she was a gold medalist. I don't know. But we just want to be inspired. And we want to be inspired by our kids who love the sport enough to stay on the backboard, like Coach Derrimer said, and hit for hours and hours and hours. We want to be inspired by kids who train hard enough to be tough enough. And instead of dumbing down the rules and playing no ad scoring and the 10-point tiebreaker, hey, folks, last week I put out a thing about the icebreaker instead of the tiebreaker. Hey, we're going to do that stupid little 10-point tiebreaker because tournament directors don't want to stay. Yeah, you heard me say it. You tournament directors just don't want to stay there late at night and finish those matches up. It's not about the kids. If you cared about the kids, you wouldn't take away the learning-packed third set of the match. That third set of matches where all the learning happens. Anyhow, if you don't want to do that, play the icebreaker, play the tiebreaker, the first set, full set for second, full set for third. Sounds idiotic? No, it's a lot better than the stuff that you're using out there to USTA, that abbreviated matches, the AA scoring, asterisks abbreviated. We needed asterisks for it. This session today, the guest, Terry Derrimer, I'm inspired. I remember why I want to coach. I remember why I played tennis as a youngster, to be around Paul Ditzenberger and to have brother Roland Driscoll. Brother Roland, brother, you are over. I think you're still alive in Knoxville, Tennessee, and God bless you. I mean, to be around him as a man, as our athletic director at Cathedral High School, and then also to be our tennis coach, and to be around such a man, and I still remember his voice. And I still remember, and God bless you, and know how much I respect and believe. And to be around the people like that, this is what it is about. It's not about the success. It is not about the sport serving you. It's not about the sport serving us. It is about us serving the sports. It's about what we give to the sport. And we, our leaders must understand this. And folks, I don't care if you leaders are the smartest guys on the block. I don't care if you are the best. You're there in leadership position because you're so smart. If you don't inspire us, you're doing nothing. You're doing nothing. Garbage. We can get better than you off the internet and better than the knowledge. You must inspire those people below you. You must inspire or nothing matters. Thank you, Terry Derrimer. If I had 100 days left in my life, I'd want to spend 50 of them with a man like this. And then I'd want my family around me, of course. But in as you get later in life, we need to be inspired. It's not about the motivation. It's about having a cause worth fighting for. And I want to say this thing, USTA participation will not breed excellence. Excellence in being inspired will breed participation. That's where you got it backwards. This participation trophies and making everybody feel good and kumbaya, you know, that is not going to be it. You'll get the kids to the court, but you won't keep them at the court with just participation models. It must be the pursuit of excellence. If you were the director of a music department in a high school, you must develop a great orchestra, and then the fallout people to get cut, you'll make great band members. But if you just go at it by just saying we're going to make a lot of great band members out of this, you'll never have an orchestra. Excellence breeds participation. Participation does not breed excellence, no matter how many times you think it might. It is not top-down socialist mentality that everybody gets a fair shake. It is about bottom-up fighting and learning how to develop the heart first. And in this sport, is the head, the heart, and the legs. Don't ever forget what I'm saying here if you want to be a great tennis player. Learn how to take away their legs, beat their head, break their heart, and their game will fall. Folks, thanks very much for being on today. And Terry Jeremy
in America, born in a hot land, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. He got the red, white, blue, flying high on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his left arm. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of his USA. Made in America. Made in America.
And it's Coach Chuck Creasy reminding you that you're in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or loss. Again, thanks, Coach Derrimer, for the great, great program today. We'll see y'all next week on American Tennis.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.